Well, you know, when people speak about how they became what they are, they usually refer to a melange of influences and issues. You know, then there was this teacher who did this, and then there was someone who did that, and so forth. And the impression you get then is, I mean, I'll do the same, but I'd like us to keep something in mind. And that is, we're not just a mixture of these influences that impact on us. We aren't just passive receptors. What's often left out is the individual himself or herself. The receptor, the person who's speaking, is not at all passive. He or she would be an active synthesizer. You take these influences and things that impact on you, and you're not just an empty vessel who gets filled by that, but you actually work with that. You actually you bring additives of your own to these things. You bring your own mental labor power, your own emotive concern. You bring your own innate energy and insight to an issue and a cause. And this adds to our collective impact and our collective empowerment. So people sometimes say to me, they don't ask, they say, you're red diaper, right? You're red diaper. You know, I guess assuming you hold so fast to these views, you must have got them through your mother's milk, you know. And I say, well, no, I'm not. My consciousness and my activism was arrived at through a very circuitous process. Mostly self-education, mostly undoing my miseducation. And, you know, quite often, the most important dialogue we have is with ourselves. So remember that. It's an interior dialogue, at least on a lot of occasions. At least it is for me. We do have evidence of people who have never had an interior dialogue. But they're all in power right now. Now, in my home was relatively politically impoverished. It was a blue-collar, Italian-American, working-class, low-income. We were really poor. Money was a constant problem and a concern, which itself is a political lesson that one kind of learns in one's gut, really. Not in this society, not that much in your head. I mean, there were some good knockdown, drag out fights about Mussolini and the war. I remember those between my uncles and various people. And then there was the depression and the poverty and the fear of that depression. But generally it was a rather provincial existence. I mean, there was a candy store and the handball court and the backyards and the street. I was a street kid. I lived in the streets. I learned to fight. There were a lot of fist fights. We used to beat the brains out of each other. We had gangs, but they weren't with switchblades or anything serious, usually. Although there's a story or two there I could tell, but I don't want to start. It's very much like what Herbert Gans called the urban villagers. Gans did a study of... actually, it was an Italian-American neighborhood north end Boston. And it's a very interesting theory, which is that in the midst of large cosmopolitan cities, you have these ethnic enclaves that are recreated sort of from the old world, and where people live in a very kind of clustered, you know, they all know each other, and who's that guy? We live on 118th Street. He's from 119th Street. What is he doing here? I mean, it was really, there would be times like that when things... Not really quiet. I mean, you could walk pretty much freely down the streets, unless you were a kid, because there was the other gang who remembered how you beat up their guy. They might want to beat you up. But show you how provincial I was. One year we moved to the Bronx. For just that 1 year, it was a temporary thing, and we went back to East Harlem in New York. And all the kids, most of the kids in the class were Jewish. And here I was, what was it, 7, 8? I don't know how old I was. And I was struck by the strangeness and the foreignness of their names, you know, Rosenberg, Rosenblatt, Feingold. I mean, I said, what funny, strange name. Why didn't they have ordinary, regular American names like Puzzafiri, Bacigalupe, Mazziato, you know? Strangest names. Strange. But they were nice kids. They were nice kids, even though they had funny names. So when people ask me, well, how did you get from this neighborhood and how did you get all the way up to Yale? I always say, I didn't get all the way up to Yale. I don't think it was an ascent. I got across to Yale, as you put it. I said, but I can sum it up in one word, and that's dogs. That is, my grandfather had a brown dog, and he named him Brownie. My Uncle Nick got a white dog, big fluffy white dog. He named him Whitey. And we got a dog that had spots on it, and everybody called him Spotty. And that was the level of imagination in my family. And that's when I knew I had to get the hell out and go to school.